Welcome to the I Don't Do That podcast with me, Ocho. I get to talk to lots of different people about all the things that they don't do, and you get to hear what they say.
Na 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 na, yeah, no, I don't do that, no, I don't do that. You know it's all right, you can ask, but I don't do that, no. I don't do that.
Episode 4.
I am the source of my feelings, and I understand that. And I'm not expecting someone to read my mind and understand how the thing that they're going to say is going to make me feel.
Episode 4 is I Don't Play Drums. We're in the studio with Ogar, who does not play drums anymore. Ogar identifies himself as male and Caucasian. He's in his mid-30s, and he lives in a small town in Minnesota. Ogar, I'm happy to be talking with you today. Thanks for coming on the show.
I'm very glad to be here. I'm a big fan of what I've heard of the show so far.
Great.
So you asking me to be a part of it is something I'm really excited about. So.
Great. I hope you'll be a fan of this episode, too.
Unlikely. I like to talk, but I don't like to hear myself talk, all right. So we'll see.
Maybe you'll never hear it. So you don't play drums.
That's correct. Okay. I no longer play drums. And I would say, like, there are certain – I'll play hand drums. Mm-hmm. I'll play a djembe and, you know, jam out, you know, get a drum circle or that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I might even try out a cajon, but that's as close as I would get to, like, a trap set anymore.
Okay.
But
you were playing the drum kit before.
Yes.
And you quit.
Yes.
Can you tell me about the history of that, how it started, when, what your thoughts and feelings were at the beginning, like, what was your motivation at the beginning?
So to take it slightly before I started playing drums, sure. I grew up playing music, like piano and trumpet. From the time I was like 8-ish probably. And then I began playing guitar around 13, and a friend of mine played bass, and we started, like, we were going to start a band, and I thought this was so cool. And that was like the coolest thing in the world to me. And then we wrote a song that was our own song, and I'm sure it was absolutely horrendous, but I got really, like, you know, into that. And then we, like, you know, by the time I was like 14, 15, or like playing shows, I think we like tried to play a show when we were 13, but you know what 13-year-olds do. Anyway, so then I got really into that over the next few years, and I really was like, this is the path I want to take in my life. And I kept, you know, I was playing, like I said, guitar, had played other instruments, and then I really wanted to try out drums, and I was like...
Were you doing some rock music at that time?
Like, yeah, I started out playing, like, a lot of, like, pop-punk kind of stuff, like, very Blink-182 influenced, with a little bit of, like, influence from a couple other bands, like Rage Against the Machine, Red Hot Chili Peppers, a couple other things, but really Blink-182 focused. And then, yeah, I really wanted to try out other instruments. I was working a job, and obviously when you're, you know, in your mid-teens, like, you don't have any bills. And so I was working a job full-time in the summer, so I had all this money that I had nothing to do with. So I was buying musical instruments and gear and all kinds of stuff like that. So I eventually convinced my mom to let me buy a drum set and have it in her basement and play drums in her basement. So I bought a drum set, and I think that was when I was, I mean... I generally say 17, but it may have been when I was 16. I think it was probably 17, but I'm not 100% sure. Either way, that's when I started, got a drum kit, and as soon as I started playing the drums, I was like, "Oh yeah, this is the instrument."
You found your calling then.
Yes. So I've always had, like, a mathematically oriented mind, and I love patterns and, like, solving puzzles, and in my mind, drum beats are these, like, patterns, and coming up with, you know, like, song structures and then, like, the way to respond to what other instruments are doing and fills and all those things, those are all puzzles that lock into a pattern in my head. And, like, you know, I learned how to read music so young that I kind of have, like, something similar to sheet music rolling in my head when I'm playing, like, I can not see but, like, feel in my mind what the patterns are, and, like, so when I know a song, I feel those patterns rolling through, and it's okay. That feeling is okay on other instruments, but I really connected to it with drums. So that really, the rhythmic aspect, the kind of mathematical way that I approached it, that was very satisfying mm-hmm. to me.
It's all about counting.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. It's 100% about counting, and it's about subdivisions, and it's about mm-hmm. syncopations, and it's about, you know, what can you do with 1, 2, 3, 4? Well, it turns out pretty much infinite things.
Right.
Especially when you start getting, you know, multiple limbs involved and all these things. And so there was, you know, from the time I started playing music with my friend at 13, I had decided I am going to be a musician mm-hmm. and that is what I am going to be. And when I started playing drums, I decided I am going to be a drummer. And this is, I'm dedicating my life to this. I just was like, boom, decided.
As a career, was that?
That was, yes, okay. That was my intention. Mm-hmm. Then because of, you know, we all like strive for external validation. I wanted to keep being like, I want to play better than other people around. I want to play faster than other people around. Mm-hmm. I started gravitating more and more towards faster, more technical, more, you know, music that required more proficiency to play. And that brought me to extreme metal, like brutal death metal.
Yeah.
And around, you know, like 19 or 20 years old, after I'd been playing drums for a couple of years, I got really into super brutal death metal and playing really, really high, you know, tempos, fast double bass, blast beats, all that kind of stuff. And I got so into this, to that I kind of locked myself out of ever being able to make it a career.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
Yeah, that was the problem.
Because technical death metal is not, it's not easy listening music.
No, it's not going to pay the bills either. Yeah.
It doesn't have a very wide audience.
It's super niche, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So it would be hard to make money at it.
100%.
Yeah.
I did not.
Right. In fact, I think maybe you've told me that really nobody does.
I would say the number of people making money playing death metal is extremely small. Like when people ask me about it, the example I like to give is Suffocation is one of the bands that created the genre of death metal, helped create it back in the late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
They're the kings of the genre. They've been around forever. They're literally subgenres of death metal that were spawned off of riffs written by Suffocation. Mm-hmm. Like, it's insane how influential they are. Their singer quit the band within the last several years because it was too much of a hassle to take time off of work to go on tour.
Mm-hmm.
This is the guy that's been in the band since the 80s.
Yeah.
And, like, that's the level of, like,
they have fans all over the world.
Yes. They're a massive, massive band. And, yeah, I mean, like, he didn't want to keep taking off time from work.
Yeah, so, yeah.
Like, they had to get a different singer.
Yeah.
That's insane to me.
Yeah, it really shows how hard it is to be an artist and make a living at it, even if you're incredibly famous. I mean, way more famous than me.
Right.
Yeah.
And so you have to be commercially viable, right? And I wasn't doing something commercially viable, and that didn't. So,
did you know that was happening? Did you start to have a different mindset of like, okay, this isn't going to be my career now? And like,
I did a pretty good job throughout, especially my early and mid 20s, of deluding myself. That
you could be the one.
If you would have asked me in a logical way, are you going to make money at this? It would have been really hard for me to say yes.
Yeah.
But I was not willing to allow myself to really look at it logically at the time, I don't think.
You're following your heart.
Yes.
You wouldn't take no for an answer.
Right. Yeah, well, and I also had that. And I think we've had conversations about this before, about like, you know, like the drive for like artistic integrity and things like that. And I was so like just rock solid on this idea of like, I am going to play what I want to play to the note, and no one will ever convince me to play a note I don't want to play, much less a song I don't want to, whatever. Like, so like I, you know,
and you were successful in that regard. Am I right? Like,
yeah, I mean, I did that,
yeah,
you know, but it didn't get me anywhere. Right. And that was part of what ended up moving me toward disillusionment.
Mm-hmm. So, You got somewhere, but it wasn't where you at some point, wherever you got, you started thinking about giving it up, right?
Yeah, I would say like probably into my early 30s, I really started realizing, you know, after, because I had a pretty good run from about 2010 on with a band that I was really happy with.
Mm-hmm.
I saw more success with that band than any other band I had been in or probably ever have been in.
That Face of Oblivion?
Correct.
Yeah.
And And we did, you know, we toured and we put out albums on labels I had heard of before they tried to sign. You know what I'm saying? Like, it was right. Like, it felt like we were really getting where I wanted to go. And it felt like success was right around the corner. And so I had a really good run with that.
Did you want to plug any of that? Can people buy those records?
I mean, yeah, you can go to Comatose Music. Mm-hmm. It was the label that we put out two albums as Face of Oblivion. Mm-hmm. You know, the songs are out there on streaming services and things like that. Mm-hmm. I don't know who's going to necessarily be interested in, you know, this brutal death metal stuff. But if anybody is, you're more than welcome to check it out.
I was the audio engineer for the drums on the second
it's
album.
True. Yeah. Cataclysmic Desolation is the name of that album. And yeah, you recorded the drums with, or I recorded the drums with you. And you, yeah.
Right
you,
here.
That's true. We did it here. That's yeah. true. We did it in this building. Yeah. This very domicile. Yeah, and that was an amazing experience. I really liked being in that band, but there was a tour that we did where it became very clear that there were issues in the band. And so mm-hmm. then, you know, another band was formed out of members from that band, and then people started getting upset and feeling like left out. Mm-hmm. And then there was this whole falling out thing, and the band basically fell apart. And then tried to get this other band going, but like different people had different ideas for what they wanted to do with that band yeah. in terms of...
That was Septicemic, and that had members of Face of Oblivion in it.
Yeah, so yeah. Face of Oblivion was five people.
Mm-hmm.
Septicemic was started as three of those people.
Right.
And then when Face of Oblivion really fell apart, the fourth one we didn't really want to leave behind because we love the dude.
Yeah.
So we added him to the band.
Okay.
And he's amazing. Like, it's not like mm-hmm. it was like a charity thing where he didn't deserve the spot that we gave him right. in the band. Like, he right. obviously yep. was more than qualified to do it.
Yeah.
But anyway, so like, yeah, we had different ideas about what we wanted to do with it. And I started realizing like, you know, what success actually looks like in a death metal band
yeah.
is not really a lifestyle that super appealed to me.
That's like the touring and that kind of thing? Or what is it?
Touring for sure is like, I always feel like when you go on tour, like you spend, you know, for every week on tour,
uh-huh.
you come home with about an hour of fun stories.
Uh-huh.
And the rest of tour, which mm-hmm. obviously a week is a lot longer than an hour,
mm-hmm.
is pretty terrible.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, like, it's, you have the good experiences, and I look back on, I mean, there's a tour that I went on in 2016
mm-hmm.
that I still, to this day, consider the best week of my life. Mm-hmm. Right, because it was just a little over a week, and it was still like the things that the people that I met, the friendships I made, the experiences I had, probably one of the I would put it up there as the best week of my entire life. However, in that experience, in that time dealing with the things that I was dealing with during that week, not so great.
Okay.
Like looking back on it, I can see the positive and everything, but dealing with it, not so much. And then the other thing,
rose-colored glasses.
Yes.
Looking back, yeah.
I have the benefit now of, like, I can look back on that, you know, hour or two of fun memories and really value those things and the, you know, whatever. But because now I don't have to think about the hours in a van driving mm-hmm. from city to city. I don't mm-hmm. have to think about the people that, you know, were not enjoyable to deal with. I don't, you know what I mean? I get to choose which parts of that week I think about.
You could tell bad stories.
Yes.
Yeah.
I just choose not to think about them. So it'd be tougher for me to remember
That's
them this long later.
That's a pretty common phenomenon in human memory anyway. And it's good, or we'd probably just hate our lives even more than we do. So what success is in a death metal band is not what you, that didn't really appeal to you.
Yeah, I mean, it got to the point where it's like, here are like, you know, you're going to get to play, you know, out of the, you know, 10 biggest festivals in the country every year, you're going to get to play 3 to 5 to sometimes even more of them
mm-hmm.
in that year, right? You know, so you're like on the biggest festivals in front of the biggest crowds, and that should be success. Sometimes, I mean, we headlined, I headlined a massive festival one time. That was amazing. But that weekend, around the half hour, everything other than the half hour on stage was terrible.
Yeah.
Like that weekend where we headlined the festival was probably one of the worst weekends of my life, at least, especially that period of my life.
Yeah.
And then, you know, like with Septicemic, like I love those guys. I don't ever want to say anything bad about them. I have nothing bad to say about them. Mm-hmm. I don't want to make it sound like I have any negative feelings towards them or anything they wanted to do or that they were in any way in the wrong.
Sure.
But for me, I felt like when we would play shows, we would take shows that I knew were the correct shows to take for the band. I didn't look forward to doing them anymore. You know, like we got a really sweet offer to play these shows in Chicago and Minneapolis. Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I live in rural Minnesota, so I'm spending, you know, 8 hours driving to Chicago to play a show, only to spend, you know, 7.5 to 8 hours to drive up to the Twin Cities to play another show the next night and then drive home again, you know, drive 2 hours home after that show. Like, that's not fun. Like, it's so much money. And if you still are in love with the music and you're in love with the hanging out with people and all the other things that go along with it,
yeah.
I'm sure it's an insanely positive experience.
Yeah.
But it got to a point where it wasn't for me anymore.
Yeah. I mean, I could imagine how that could be thrilling, and it could even be thrilling for years, but maybe after a while, it's just like the thrill wears off and the work is still there that you have to put in.
Yeah.
So all of the driving, I suppose the fact that it's a niche kind of a genre means that you have to go far away to get to the next place. Otherwise, you're playing the same venue all the time.
Yeah.
And that wears off for you and for an audience too, I'm sure. It needs to get up in front of new people and that kind of thing. And traveling, you're either in the car by yourself for a long time or else you're in a van with a bunch of sweaty, noisy dudes. And sometimes just being other people, close to other people, can just be too much. I mean, that can wear on you in itself.
No matter how much you enjoy being around your friends.
Yeah.
There is a certain amount of time where you don't really want to, you want some time away from them.
Mm-hmm.
And like when you're on the road, whether it's sometimes when it's a weekend thing, that can be really rough.
Yeah. Well, people get that with their families too.
Yes. You know? 100%. Yeah. I mean, people, you can get that with your significant other sometimes.
Absolutely.
Right? Like if you live together, sometimes you just need time to yourself.
Yeah.
And this isn't me trying to speak for anybody else, but that's been my experience.
Sure.
Yeah.
So, I imagine, too, as a drummer, because I've been one, you also have a more work to do when you get to the show and when you're done.
Yeah.
So if you're on a stage and you're sharing a bill with another band, which I'm sure you almost always are, then you have to get on and get off sort of quickly.
Yeah.
So you can get on pretty soon after the band before you and you can play your whole set and you don't set the night back, right? And then you have to play this set, which requires a lot of energy from you. And then you have to take down all your drums and get them off the stage. Did that enter into it?
Absolutely.
Okay.
And when I really realized, like there was a moment, and I remember the show, there was a moment when I was loading my gear out of my car into the venue.
Mm-hmm.
And I just thought, like, and it was stressing me out.
Yeah.
I was so stressed and I was so angry. I, like, yelled at someone who had done nothing. There was absolutely no logical reason why that person deserved to be yelled at, and I yelled at them. I was like, what kind of person am I now? You know, am I really the kind of person who goes around yelling at people? Because it's not the kind of person that I want to be. I don't want to be around people like that, and I certainly don't want to be a person like that. So getting stressed out to that level over something that is supposed to be my like hobby that brings joy into my life. And that's how I'm feeling about it. That's what it's turning me into. That was very much a wake up call for me. I really felt like I needed to make a change at that point. And I had been having thoughts about that for a long time up to that point, but that was when it really kind of crystallized for me. And that's why I remember that moment pretty specifically, like pulling stuff out of my trunk and being like, I totally just yelled at that dude.
The circumstances of that, under which you yelled at him? I know he didn't need to get yelled at, but
it was nothing. It was another band had put more gear on the stage than apparently I thought that they should at that time to check the system. And I like yelled about being mad about another band having their stuff when there were other bands that were performing before them. So why did they have their stuff on the stage? Well, obviously they were going to pull their stuff off of the stage before. Like this was hours before the show started. There was more than enough time for them to do what they were doing and get their stuff out of the way for everybody else to get their stuff on. And there was they were not doing anything that inconvenienced anyone.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got mad about it.
Yeah.
For no reason.
Right.
It was completely illogical and made no sense. And it just made me look like and feel like a total jerk.
Yeah. And I mean, we all have moments where we get in our heads and we don't see things clearly. And
I mean, it took me all of like 45 seconds to think, to realize like that was really stupid.
Yeah.
Because I was like walking out of the venue and I yelled about it. And then by the time I got to my car to pull more stuff out of my trunk, I was like, why did I just do that?
Well, I'm sure you weren't really used to having that kind of lapse with reason. You probably are more even tempered than that almost all the time.
Yeah.
So that was strange to you.
Yeah.
So that at that moment you remember reconsidering your pursuit of playing the drums?
Yeah. Well, like I said, I mean, it was something I had already been thinking about. It was a thought that I had had for a long time about, like, how much fun am I getting out of this? How much money am I spending on this? Is it worth it? Because I'm never going to say that hobbies aren't worth spending money on, because they absolutely are, right? But I just felt like the amount of money I was spending and the emotional toll it was taking on me, the mental toll it was taking on me, the amount of time I was putting into it, like, all of these things, like, if you're not enjoying the thing that is supposed to be, you know, like, why would you pursue a hobby that makes you miserable?
Right.
And there was quite a long time where, so that moment wasn't the moment when I realized I didn't want to do it anymore. Mm-hmm. That moment was the moment where I realized continuing to do it was so detrimental for me that the things keeping me going weren't worth continuing for.
Mm-hmm. And what was keeping you going, though? Was it still fun to play the music and that? Or, like, what was keeping you going?
A combination of the camaraderie with bandmates. Because, I mean, there are people who, because of my playing music with them, they will forever be a cherished part of my life, people that I love and will love for the rest of my life because of, you know, the time spent in bands together. I mean, I know people that I was in bands with for a decade, and I will do anything for those people, right? And I didn't want to disappoint them. I didn't want to put them in a position where they needed to replace me. They're always, you know, you're always agreeing to shows, you're always booking stuff, and like when I got a show coming up in 2 months or a month or whatever, and, you know, it's like, do I do the thing that I want to do for me and quit the band, knowing that they're going to have to either cancel that show, which no band ever wants to do, or they're going to have to find someone else to replace me. And not to like toot my own horn, but
I know
brutal death metal is not an easy thing to play.
I know.
So finding someone else who can play the stuff is not going to be just a snap of the fingers, right?
Yeah, I mean,
if you're in a rock band, you know, in a metropolitan area, and you just need a guitarist who can, you know, play a Journey song, you're going to find somebody.
I know.
But if you need, you know, if you're in a smaller area of Minnesota and you need somebody who can play 300 BPM blast beats, you know, you're going to struggle.
Yeah.
And again, that's, whatever. So that was something I knew, like, I didn't want to put that on. It made me feel bad to even consider putting my friends, my bandmates in that position. So that really
So there was a consideration for others.
Yes, very much so.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's kind of what kept you going at the end?
That kept me going for a long time. And then, like I said, that one moment, just realizing how stressed I was and what the toll it was taking on me, I really realized, like, I can't keep doing this.
Was there a combination of that camaraderie with something else? Was it with obligation or was it something?
Oh, yeah, no, it was definitely like feeling obligated.
Okay.
And then also the part of it too, like I said, like a big reason why, you know, like in retrospect, I can see that part of why I got into playing brutal death metal was that, you know, the level of skill required to play that music, the level of difficulty, it made me feel like, well, if I get good enough to play this, then people will think I'm cool. People will tell me I'm good. People, whatever, like, you know, getting that kind of external validation.
That must have worked. I mean, you blow my mind when, you know, seeing you play drums. So, like, I can't be the only one.
Yeah, but do you know how many compliments I got that I remember?
Yeah.
not a one.
So, yeah.
You know, when you have that like psychology where you're always seeking validation and then you get the validation, you're like, ah, that wasn't enough. Mm-hmm. And then it just goes away, right? And somebody says something negative, it's like, oh, I'm going to hold on to that for the rest of my life.
Yeah. Sounds like an addiction.
Yeah, like, man. It is. And
I can't get enough of that. Those compliments. And,
right.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I mean, like, yeah, when you're addicted to a drug, you don't remember, you know, a hit that you took a week ago.
Nope.
All you're worried about is, where am I going to get the next one?
Yep.
You know, and yeah, so I mean, it was very, very much like that. And, you know, realizing that about myself, you know, as I, you know, getting older and, you know, getting into my, you know, like I said, I was in my 30s already and coming into my mid 30s and stuff. And, you know, just kind of trying to be a little bit more introspective and make better decisions and make my decisions for better reasons.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, I mean, this isn't really a good reason to do all of this,
mm-hmm.
you know? And yeah, like I said, a lot of it was obligation to others and not wanting to disappoint other people.
Mm-hmm.
And again, like this whole, like, you know, like seeking validation thing, you don't want to disappoint people, right? Like I've been a people pleaser a lot of my life because
I can see those two things going hand in hand. Yeah.
Right.
So. Yeah. You want people to appreciate you, so like letting them down would hurt you as well.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah.
Very much so.
Yeah. But so it does seem like it's kind of about the juice and the squeeze at some point. It's like there's a lot of squeezing and you're not really getting any juice inside to like keep you going and sustain yourself. And that all makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the pandemic kind of is what made it really easy for me. As the pandemic happened, obviously no more shows are booked.
Yeah.
We're not practicing.
Mm-hmm.
And then once the topic came up of like, hey, we should maybe start thinking about practicing again. Mm-hmm. I was like, this is my moment. I got to choose right now.
Yeah.
Because either I'm honest and I say, hey guys, I'm really sorry. I don't want to do this anymore.
Yeah.
Or I put myself right back in that situation and then I'm back in a loop that I don't know if I'll ever have another opportunity to get out of without hating myself for it.
Yeah.
And which isn't to say that I don't have negative feelings about making the decision that I made.
Right.
But it would be a lot tougher if I would have gone back into it. So I just had to make the really, really difficult decision to inform all of the people that I was in bands with, because I was in multiple bands at the time still. And I had to inform all of those people because I felt that everybody deserved a personal like, hey, you know, this isn't about you, this is about me, and this is like, I value you, I value the relationship that we've had, I value the things that we've done together, you know, all those kinds of things, and just trying to tell everybody, you know, shoot a message to the band chats and say like,
mm-hmm.
hey, like, I love you guys, but I just can't do this anymore.
How many people was that? Like, between all the bands, how many people deserved an actual personal message and discussion?
I don't know if I messaged everyone personally directly, but I know that I messaged...
Even in a group chat, I mean, everyone is there, so everyone can talk back and
have
a dialogue, yeah.
So I was in two very active bands at the time, Septicemic and Glutton for Punishment.
Right.
And I love all of the people that I was in those bands with.
Uh-huh.
And I did not want to do anything that would have any negative impact on them, but it was the decision I felt was the only right decision for me.
Yeah.
So I did message. Maybe Septicemic, I messaged the guys individually. I don't remember for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And I may have messaged some of the Glutton for Punishment guys individually before sending like something to the band chat. I don't really remember exactly how I did it all. But as soon as the decision was made, I did kind of like, because it was one bandmate from Septicemic, like, hey, you know, could we start practicing again?
Mm-hmm.
And I had to be like, okay, you know what? I'm just going to tell you right now, I think I'm done.
Mm-hmm.
And then tell everybody else in the band, and then went to the Glutton for Punishment and had to tell them, like, hey, guys, you know, it's over for me.
And I imagine more offers kind of trickled in, because you're a bit for hire, right? Like, you were playing with other groups off and on and that kind of thing, and people, you'd have side projects and things like that.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, anytime somebody wants to put a death metal band together in the Midwest, they're looking for a drummer.
Uh-huh.
And when you're known as a drummer who plays death metal in the area, within a state or two of someone who's trying to put a band together, if they don't find someone in their immediate vicinity, they're going to start widening their search area. And eventually it's going to bring them to a point where they're going to reach out to me, you know, pretty quickly if they're in the Twin Cities, maybe take a little longer if they're, you know, in Kansas or something. But eventually, though, if they need someone and they can't find someone, they're going to keep widening that area and asking people that they know play death metal on drums. Mm-hmm. And so especially like, you know, I was getting offers like that fairly regularly. Yeah. And, you know, and then after I kind of said I was done, and then I made a big public post on Facebook about, right. you know, being done, to just kind of let everybody know this part of my life mm-hmm. is over mm-hmm. and I'm moving to other things. I did still, you know, I mean, I would get friend requests from people and accept the friend request and immediately get a message like, hey, I know you play drums. I'm putting a band together. Do you want to join my band? Yeah. Can I send you some songs and you can tell me if you're interested in playing mm-hmm. with us?
What's your reaction to that, like emotionally?
It got to a point. Something I struggled a lot with was feeling like people only wanted me around because I played drums.
Right.
And, you know, wondering like if I didn't play while I was still playing and in bands and stuff, I'm wondering if I stopped playing drums, would these people want me in their life?
Yeah.
Do they actually want me in their life, or do mm-hmm. they just want somebody who can play this on drums in their life, mm-hmm. in their band? Right.
Well, someone who hasn't met you and is just looking for a drummer probably just wants someone who plays drums.
Right.
Yeah.
And so I'm already struggling with feeling that way about people I'm extremely close with and have known for years and years mm-hmm. and see all the time and spend an enormous amount of time with and have deep bonds with. Yeah. I'm already feeling that way about them, you know, and having those questions, having those thoughts, you know, somebody that I've never met before, doesn't mm-hmm. know anything about me other than I've played drums and they know the name of a band or two that I've been in.
Right.
You know, sends me a friend request and shoots me a message, and that's what they're looking for. That definitely feels like, cool, this is my value in the world. And that's not...
Because it pokes at that thing you already have going on emotionally about right. how... So was that... Do you think that was mental, or did people actually, like, is empirically, did they shut you out of their life after that? I mean, I would know that you don't, like... Obviously, you're not going to spend as much time together if you're not in a band anymore, right? But, like, do you think that, like, how much credence do you give that? Or how much do you just, like, chase it away and be like, no, you know? Like,
the amount of contact that I have had with people that I was in bands with who I considered extremely close friends, the amount of contact that I've had with those people after no longer playing drums is extremely minimal.
Yeah.
There are a couple of exceptions that I communicate with more regularly, and then there are a couple of people that I know just kind of keep to themselves in general anyway, and I don't, you know. Part of it too is like I'm not the best at reaching out to people, so like,
sure,
I don't necessarily initiate a lot of contact, but they're not initiating contact with me either, and it just, you know, so
and they got lives and they got
right.
And they
and they're still playing music and
they're doing the thing,
spending their time trying to chase their goals and achieve their you know
they're probably talking to people who are helping them with that and
right.
becoming friends with them and that kind of thing and
and I mean I'm not present in their lives anymore right like a lot of everybody I was in bands with I lived a significant different distance away from
so
it's not like these are people that you know a 15 minute drive we could be hanging out on the weekend it mm-hmm. would be hours of driving mm-hmm. each way to see any of these people mm-hmm. so like you know and you know people have kids and families and all these other obligations
so it doesn't mean that they don't miss you or they don't like you or value you otherwise it's just
it can feel that way but that doesn't necessarily mean that it's true
But you still got to miss them. Like, you don't have the contact that you had before.
Absolutely.
So, was it worth it, or do you have any regrets about it, or?
There are things that I do very much miss about being in bands with people and seeing people and working towards a common goal and mm-hmm. achieving something and sharing that achievement with people. You know, like when you write a song, that feels great. When you play it for the first time all the way through, that feels great. Mm-hmm. When you perform it for the first time, that feels great. When you record a group of songs and you release it and it gets a good reception and people buy it and you see people posting about listening to it and you see people share it independent of anything to do with you and those kinds of all of those
wearing
things are
your t-shirt.
Amazing. Yes, you go to a show that your band's not playing and you see people wearing your band's t-shirt. That all feels amazing. I remember, like, there were times
getting picked out and you don't know somebody and they want to talk to you because
there are a lot of those things that I definitely like. That there are a lot of those things that I miss for sure. But knowing that the only way that I can have those things is to put myself back in the place that I was in,
mm-hmm.
I don't think that that would be worth it for me. I don't, I think that there's too much negativity that went along with that, and there was it was too much work. It was too much money. It was too much time.
It seems like you're kind of at a breaking point. Like you weren't gonna do that anymore. Like
I don't think that it would have been extremely unhealthy to continue.
Right.
Yeah.
So did it must have occurred to you that you could scale it back somewhat? That you could just like maybe be in one band or something like that, or like do something that was more part time or like something like that? Did
I tend to be a very all or nothing person.
Sure.
This is something I struggle with in a lot of areas of my life. Mm-hmm. I'm either 100% in or I'm just not interested and I'll move on to something else.
That explains why you wanted to play this very difficult style of music.
Sure.
Very well. And So you wouldn't really just do it a little bit because that's not you.
Well, that is definitely part of the issue. The other issue is that in order to play the style of drums that I want to play, I would have to be putting in a very significant amount of work, especially like after not playing for an extended period of time, just to get back to where I was would require a lot of work.
It requires practice.
Yes, it requires a lot of work. And then maintaining that requires a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm also the kind of person where I'm not happy if I'm maintaining at a certain level.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm not improving, if I'm not gaining, if I'm not adding to what I can do, then I don't feel fulfilled. I feel like I'm failing.
Yeah.
So not only would I have to put in the work to get back to where I was, and there's amount of work that would require maintaining that baseline, but I wouldn't be satisfied with that. I wouldn't allow myself to do that. So I know that I would have to be doing additional work on top of that to continue growing and learning new things and being able to develop new skills that I didn't have previously. And the amount of work necessary to do that, that is like a lot of what is like was the problem and was creating stress in me.
Yeah.
And, so even if I was to like, because I've had people recommend to me like, well, you could still play and like you could just do session work. So you never have to travel for shows.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but I still have to be able to play the stuff that people would want me to record, right? Like if I don't play drums for 2 years, I can't be like, hey, I'll record drums for your band and then just go into the studio and do it.
Yeah, and it sounds like that wouldn't do it for you. Just practicing and playing occasionally kind of thing, is it wouldn't do it for you.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't get you the kind of rewards you get from being in a band and from that, like all the stuff we talked about getting recognition.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, performing is such a huge part of what makes being in a band enjoyable for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right. Like getting on stage and showing like, here's what I've been doing with my time. Here's what I'm able to do. Right. Like, writing a song that is extremely difficult to play and getting it down and then being able to take it out and show it to people.
Yeah.
That there was a lot of internal reward for me in that.
And I feel like when you're pursuing and always like trying to reach something better, there's always diminishing returns.
Yeah.
It may be you're just at a plateau.
Well, I mean,
and that, like, where are you going to go from there?
Yeah. Well, it's 100% diminishing returns, right? Like, when you first pick up drumsticks and you play a drum, playing your first beat, that feels amazing.
It's 1,000,000% better than anything you've ever done.
Right.
It's
and just, then, and then, like, you know, like when you're trying to get into death metal and you first figure out how to play clean 16th notes on the kick drum. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
That's a nirvana of a moment, right? Like, I mean, it's indescribable. And then, you know, you learn how to play blast beats. Wow, that feels amazing.
Yeah.
And then you take the blast beats from, you know, 190 beats per minute to 240 beats per minute. And yeah, I mean, that feels kind of cool. And then you take them from 240 to 260 beats per minute. And I mean, that's cool, but that's not that much faster. And then you get them from 260 to 300. And it's like, I mean, that's cool, but other people can do it too.
Right, right.
You know, and then what's whatever. And then it is so diminishing returns. I mean, that's such a perfect way to describe that feeling. It's like everything that you add on is like, okay, but that's not that big of a deal.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yeah, and I think you could probably say the same thing with external factors too, about getting your first show and then and then headlining a show and then getting on a festival and going on a tour and those things. Like there's sort of a peak that you're going to reach.
Yeah, your first couple tours are like, wow, I'm doing this.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm out here. We're, this is happening.
Yeah, yeah.
And then it's like, well, yeah, I'm doing this again, I guess. Like, cool.
Do you see people that are like, that are sort of still on that part of the journey and are like really thrilled and that kind of thing? And like, do you meet people like that, or does that not really cross your path these days?
I mean, I know of people doing that, and I want the best for them, and I hope that they continue to have that feeling. I also know people who started doing it way before I ever did and are still doing it now and get an enormous amount of enjoyment from it.
Mm-hmm.
And I love that for them.
Yeah.
And I want them to continue feeling that way.
It is a subjective thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like everything we do on this show is very subjective. It's about...
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's, and we all have different... We're all different creatures. We have a different map, I guess.
Sure.
And like, it's cool. I'm really enjoying it. So thanks for talking to me, being one of my guests.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess I really only have one more question. So like,
sure.
What are you doing instead? What are you doing these days to fill the time?
I mean, I have gotten into, I've always been a nerd, right? Mm-hmm. So I've gotten into playing trading card games. That's something I spend a fair amount of my time doing. It's also something that there's like communities around, so I can like meet people, have some level of social interaction.
Mm-hmm.
If I really want to travel, I can go to events and things like that.
Can you name some of the games you're playing?
The main game that I play is called Flesh and Blood.
Mm-hmm.
I play a little bit of Magic the Gathering, but not. I don't really put any significant amount of time or effort into that. Mm-hmm. And there are a couple other games that I've played as well. There's a game called Varia that I really like.
Varia?
Yeah.
Okay.
But Flesh and Blood is the one that I play mainly.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing that I have picked back up, that I used to be really into as a child is, like sleight of hand magic, card tricks and things like that. That's something I've, was really into when I was little. And then when I found music, I kind of just left it behind. Now that I'm not doing music anymore, I was like, you know, going down YouTube rabbit holes one day and started finding some videos of people doing card magic. And I was like, oh, that is something that I used to be interested in. Let me watch a couple more videos. And I was like, this is making me feel a way that I haven't felt in a long time. So I really want to dig into this. And so then I started, you know, I bought a deck of cards and started learning some stuff. And yeah, that's been really
it's way more portable than like four crash cymbals and all the hardware and double kick pedal and your snare and your four toms and whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Doesn't take much to set up a deck of cards.
Right, just open the box and pull them out and you're good to go.
Yeah.
They
don't take up any room on stage.
Yeah, I can carry them around in my pocket pretty easily.
Yeah, well, you were doing some of those card tricks with me and it was blowing my mind. So I admit I'm easy to fool in those with those things. I don't
That's a really good endorsement of my skill level.
Well, no, I admit
I was impressed because I'm easy to fool.
Like, I think one of them I figured out part of like what was going on, but that doesn't mean I could do it or I know how you did it. I figured out like kind of what part of the trick was in theory, you know, that was about it. So
I want to dig into that, but we don't have to.
No, I was proud of myself for that. I'll just say that.
So, I mean, I don't know, like, I don't know.
Is there anything you feel like we missed?
So it's not like a specific thing that I want to say about it, but like, I do feel it's hard to describe, like I've thought about because it's been about 2 years since I like officially quit.
Mm-hmm.
And I've thought about like the possibility of getting back into it has entered my mind. But honestly, like anytime someone asks me to join their band. And I've even had, like, I have a really, really good friend that I talk to fairly often, and he's still making music. And he was kind of talking about putting a band together and whatever. And he didn't, like, because I had told him how I felt about all the drumming. And, you know, every time I go to a show, people come up to me and be like, hey, what's up? Are you playing drums again?
Yeah, yeah.
Have you started drumming again?
Yeah.
And that's literally, like, the first thing people say to me. Is like, hey, what's up, dude? Are you drumming?
Yeah.
And then the next person I see, oh, hey, how's it going, man? Are you in any bands? Like, dude. Yeah. And so, like, I have a friend that I had told how frustrating that is for me. And that, you know, like as we've discussed, like how much it feels like that's my only value to people. And that's really mm-hmm. discouraging when I already have, like, you know, mental mm-hmm. health issues that I'm dealing with. Adding that on top of it is difficult. So I had a friend that already knew that stuff. And then he would talk about, like, well, he's putting a band together, and I could feel it.
Yeah.
Like, you're, and it kind of, not directly, but yeah. like essentially was like, if you wanted to maybe start playing drums again, you know, I kind of want to.
Yeah.
It's like, oh man, this is so like, oh, I don't know. It hurts a little bit, yeah. you know, like it's frustrating.
It seems like people are vying for your attention in some way. Like,
yeah, but again, like, is it me? Like, is it actually me?
Yeah.
Or is it something I can do for them?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. I mean,
is it me that they want, or is it a thing that they can get from me?
I mean, probably both, right? Because they want you to do it for them.
Yeah, but that's because they're struggling to find somebody else choice. To do it for them.
I mean, it could be. Or it could be that you'd be their first choice.
I don't know.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if I can give you any advice, like if you care.
I'm not.
But like, no, really. Because
if you can, cool, but I'm not trying to like dig for it.
I know. But like maybe this would help you to hurt less because the way I would see it is that it really isn't personal. It's just how they know you. So that's what they're going to talk about. Like you're really known for playing drums and they want to talk. Maybe they want to talk to you and that's the way they know how to initiate a conversation. Does that make sense?
I mean,
and they certainly don't know that it's going to hurt your feelings if sure. they ask.
That's 100% yeah. fair. Absolutely. Yeah. Like I don't expect that of anybody. I don't expect anyone to be a mind reader, but I do have a couple of friends
mm-hmm.
who have, like I've seen at shows
mm-hmm.
and I've talked to and have had really, really good heartfelt conversations with.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, the topic of drumming might come up or my not drumming anymore might mm-hmm. come up. And they're able very easily without seemingly any effort to handle it in a way that is very clear that, you know, they're not like that has nothing to do with our friendship or their feelings towards me or whatever.
Yeah.
Whereas the vast majority of people, it feels very much like that's the thing that matters. I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
But essentially like, I don't know. So I don't want to put myself in a position where I feel like I'm being used for something. And I feel like if I started drumming again, that is how I would feel.
Mm-hmm. That's been your experience with it. So if
it
to
makes
start
me feel
again,
that way.
Like you would, yeah. it seems like you'd go right back to that.
Yeah.
Sure. Sure. So you have thought about it, but it's not something you're considering.
Not at this time. And I'm not going to say it's 100% impossible that I ever will,
mm-hmm.
but I would say the likelihood is extremely small.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay. Does that feel like we covered something that we missed before?
I don't know. I feel like there's an itching in my head that there's something I need to say about it that I haven't, but I don't know how to get it out.
Uh-huh. Well, we got this song, Red Light, that we're going to play at the end of the episode.
It's true.
That we wrote about this and about.
So we actually wrote that before I fully made the decision that I was going to be done.
Uh-huh.
And we wrote that while I was struggling with these thoughts that we've been discussing and while I was struggling with, is it right to make this decision? Is it right to, like, what should my priorities be? Should I continue? Should I not? Like, what am I getting out of it? What would uh-huh. I lose if I wasn't doing it anymore?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that song deals with being frustrated. It does somewhat deal with, like, some things we've talked about, like about the history of being excited about it in the beginning and then mm-hmm. about being let down by where you got to. It doesn't really do much justice to the exciting and fun parts that happen along the way,
yeah.
but it's a song. It has a particular slant on
yeah.
on the issue. So, I was hoping maybe if we talked about that, it might bring up whatever it is that's missing.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I don't know yeah. how to. I don't know what it is. I just feel like, I don't know. I guess I don't want anyone to misinterpret anything I'm saying as like I'm saying something negative about anyone that I've worked with in the past mm-hmm. And again, like, you know, the way that I am the source of my feelings and I understand that. And so when someone says something to me and it makes me feel a certain way mm-hmm. and I'm talking about how it makes me feel that way, I don't want that to, like, if anyone, you know, hears that and feels like, oh, why are you blaming me for you feeling that way? Mm-hmm. I'm really not. Mm-hmm. Like, I can acknowledge that it was a thing that you said that made me feel that way, but I can also acknowledge that that's my responsibility to deal with, and it's not your responsibility to edit the things that you say to me because of how it could potentially – like, you don't – I'm not expecting someone else to read my mind and understand how the thing that they're going to say is going to make me feel. Like, it's not – that's not their responsibility, and I'm not trying to put that on anybody.
Yeah.
But
– well, that's amazing. I mean, to me, like – that you can have feelings and you have strong feelings and people can incite these feelings in you and then you take responsibility for them and you don't blame the person and you still feel good about the person.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, because I can think of specific instances where someone has said something to me about drumming.
Yeah.
And it's made me feel really, really, really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm still like, I love that person and I'm glad that at least even if we only talked about something that made me feel bad,
mm-hmm.
I'm so glad that I saw them and that I talked to them and that they came up to me or whatever the situation mm-hmm. was. Like, I'm still glad that the interaction happened in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
It just also unfortunately made me feel bad.
Yeah. Do you have a statement to make to people that listen to your music, people that play with you, people that ask you, what you're up to now, ask you if you're drumming, like, do you have things to say to them?
I mean, if someone wants to, you know, like, approach me or have a conversation with me, if someone is a friend of mine and they, you know, hear this and they care about, and they don't want to make me feel bad,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I said, first off, understand that I don't blame you if something you said makes me feel that way.
Yep.
But secondly, if you wanted to try to avoid that, you know, you asking me like, what are you up to now?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's great. Like, cool. Yeah. I'll have a conversation about it. And I want to know what you're up to now too. Let's talk about that as well.
Yeah.
Like, let's have that mutual conversation. That sounds great.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what are your plans for the future?
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to say, when are you going to start drumming again? You can say, what are you doing? You know, do you have plans for the future? Are there, you know, what are your plans for the hobbies you're pursuing now? Are there other hobbies you might pursue? Whatever. And let's have that conversation about you too and whatever else is going on in your life. And
hell yeah.
I want to have those conversations and make those connections. But, you know, so if there's a way to just not drive it back to one hobby that I had, and I had that hobby for a while, but.
And you crushed it.
I don't necessarily need that to define me for the rest of my life.
Right, right. Do you have anything to say to the people that you were playing with? Same thing or different message? Or
no, the biggest thing would just be that none of the things that I have said, and I think I may have said this before, but none of the things that I have said are intended as a slight against anyone that I've ever been in a band with. Well, maybe I can't go that far because I have some negative things to say about some people I've been in bands with. But
you've been in bands with a lot of people.
That's true. But all of the people that I was in bands with when I decided to quit drumming, not a single one of those people are someone that I have negative feelings about.
Yeah.
And none of me leaving those bands had anything to do with negativity mm-hmm. towards any of those people. And I still, to this day, don't have any negativity towards any of those people.
Mm-hmm.
Every single one of those people is someone that I love and I mm-hmm. cherish my relationship that I've had with them.
Mm-hmm.
And any level of relationship that we may or may not have now, I still value them. And if, you know, we haven't talked for a while and we see each other,
mm-hmm.
I'm not going to be like, why haven't you reached out to me? I'm going to be like, I'm really glad we're having this interaction now.
Yeah.
And that's how I'm going to feel about it. And that's how I feel about every single one of those people, whether I was in Septicemic with you, Glad for Punishment, as those were the two active bands I was in at the time.
Right.
I feel that way about every single one of those people.
So the love is still there and the door is still open.
100%.
All right. Well, it's been awesome to have you on. Thanks for being here.
Thank you for taking the time to chat with me and listen to me. I don't know. Say nothing.
Absolutely. It's been great. All those things you don't do now.
That's right.
Yeah. Talk about the void.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And as promised, here's the song Red Light, written by myself and Ogar, performed under the moniker Garcho. Enjoy.
On a red light, waste your breath blowing on loaded dice. Threw one punch and I missed twice. Fell so slow it feels like flight as I take a dive in this rigged fight. As I sacrifice my sacrifice as I slide into midlife, and I still ain't done shit right.
As a younger man, was I mad driven. Went to bat blind as a bat. Nobody gave a lesson on how to make a living, and if anybody did, I sure as shit didn't listen. Up all night blasting bad advice. If I played this hand right, I might not come in last. Same shit on my teacher's lips in class. Starry eyes and rose colored glass. Never wake up from the dream, they said. You could be what you wanna be, they said. Here's what you need to succeed, they said. It's a land of opportunity, they said. Full speed ahead, down the back roads. Too much traffic and not much action. Always on watch, but forgot the blind spot where I bet the whole pot got nowhere and stopped.
Switched on a red light, wasted breath blowing on loaded dice. Threw one punch and I missed twice. Fell so slow it feels like flight as I take a dive in this rigged fight. As I sacrifice my sacrifice as I slide into midlife, and I still ain't done shit right.
Switched on the red light, wasted breath blowing on loaded dice. Threw one punch and I missed twice. Fell so slow it feels like flight as I take a dive in this rigged fight. As I sacrifice my sacrifice as I slide into midlife, and I still ain't done shit right.
Stop dead in my tracks are dead anyway. 2 decades in the game and it's like I was born yesterday. Cause it was just today I startled awake. Hey, I paid my dues, payback's way past due, and my bills are way past due too. They've comped my drinks and they've comped my friends, and my only compensation has been compliments. Don't call it a broken dream, cause it never once functioned. It's so much fun, this hardly hurts. I lose my ass to share this passion. I work so hard and it hardly works. I could kick every ass and take every name and raise on to greatness with no gains. Staying in's a mistake. I'm folding. I keep my holdings, you keep raising the stakes. I make a break for it, that's my big break. This blows, I'm
tell
over it.
Why did I decide to be an artist? Someone please send me backwards in time.
If you come out on top, you probably deserve credit, but you probably admitted it was a lot of dumb luck. Some schmuck works hardest, plans smartest to be the brokest, lonely, greatest lead guitarist. Every yard is a deck stacked up to your neck, packed with Hollywood headshots, stuff in the drawers. Your work's an unrewarded chore. All this could be yours and more. Sleeping on floors until your 40s, and drugs sitting your band on tour. Hacks and fakes you've never heard the names of, selling their ways to make it that they made up. Nothing ventured, nothing gained. Everything ventured, nothing gained. You did nothing wrong and came away with nothing. Thanks for playing.
Tell me why.
Waste of breath blowing on loaded dice. Threw one punch and I missed twice. Fell so slow it feels like flight. As I take a dive in this rigged fight. As I sacrifice my sacrifice. As I slide into midlife, and I still ain't done shit right.
Switched on the red light. Waste of breath blowing on loaded dice. Threw one punch and I missed twice. Fell so slow it feels like flight. As I take a dive in this rigged fight. As I sacrifice my sacrifice. As I slide into midlife, and I still ain't done shit right.
When you have that like psychology where you're always seeking validation and then you get the validation, you're like, ah, that wasn't enough.
Hoo-ha, hoo-ha.
Did you like today's podcast? Maybe you want to show your support. Please visit idontdothatpodcast.com/give to make a donation in the amount of your choosing. That's idontdothatpodcast.com/give. It would help us very much, And to show our appreciation, we give you access to exclusive content with a donation of any amount. IDon'tDoThatPodcast.com/give. And if you have an interesting, heartfelt, or entertaining story about something that you don't do and you'd like to be a guest on I Don't Do That, please visit OchoTunes.com/guest to apply to be a guest on our show. My name is Ocho. I'm your host, chief engineer, and producer. I also composed and performed the theme music. Shout-outs to the nomadic minister, Melissa Ketchum, for recently giving me the opportunity to compose and record the theme music for her podcast, The Awakening Hour, which will be streaming soon. If you need any music composed, recorded, or even performed live, please contact me on my website, ochotunes.com. Shout-out always and infinitely to our sponsor, Anders with Primetime Web. Background music was performed throughout today's episode by Tyler Watson and Ocho. Thanks again to our guest, Ogar, for your insight and your honesty. We are sharing our stories to celebrate the diversity of human experience, and I will talk to you again, if I'm lucky.
I don't do that.